Welcome to SFF Yeah, a podcast dedicated to all things science fiction and fantasy. This is episode 146. We are recording on January 20th. I am Sharifa Williams here with Jen Northington. And today, it's time for Jen's favorite thing in the world, stats. We are looking back at 2022 on this show and talking about some of the most picked titles, some of our most discussed authors, lots of good stuff, all tracked by Jen and her famous spreadsheets.
I just can't. It's like I like trip over something and I've made a spreadsheet. Like I just can't. I don't know what it is. There's just something so satisfying about being able to see things all beautifully lined up and filterable. I have a problem. I have a spreadsheet problem. But I think it's fun to look at this stuff. So here we are.
Yes.
I love it.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, everybody should know that I have a terrible head cold and I'm like right on a lot of DayQuil. So we'll see how this goes. But just FYI, our sound editor is going to be doing extra work on this episode. So big, big appreciation for Caitlin in advance.
Tis the season. I feel for you because I have been sick podcasting before and it's not fun. But we're going to get through this and we're going to do our best. Mm-hmm. So before we talk about some stats, we wanted to remind everybody that we have TBR, that's Tailored Book Recommendations. And you know, a certain season, a certain holiday is coming up, Valentine's or Galentine's Day. And if you're trying to find the perfect gift for your Valentine or Galentine's, I recommend, and we all recommend, gifting Tailored Book Recommendations. So if you do send TBR as a gift, your friend, boo, partner will tell our professional book nerds about what they love and what they don't, what their reading goals are, and what they need more of in their bookish life. Then they can just sit back and our bibliologists will go to work selecting books just for them. TBR has plans for every budget, so you can surprise your bookish boo with tailored book recommendations this Valentine's and visit mytbr.co/gift. Again, that's mytbr.co/gift. All right, so we are going to take a break for a sponsor, and then we're going to talk news.
Today's episode is brought to you by Children of Virtue and Vengeance by Tomi Adeyemi. If you like pretty things, like I like pretty things, I got something for you. The stunning sequel to the worldwide phenomenon Children of Blood and Bone is now available in a deluxe paperback edition with gorgeous spray-painted and stenciled edges and an exclusive excerpt of the earth-shaking Children of Anguish and Anarchy. Now, this is a series for you if you like action, you like world building, you like mythology retellings, lore retellings, specifically of a West African variety, has all that and more. It was also an instant number one New York Times bestseller, a Good Morning America book club pick, and now both Children of Bone and Children of Virtue and Vengeance are available in these deluxe editions. They're pretty, they're gorgeous. The finale to the series is coming June 25th this year, so you can get the pretty editions of the first two books and be ready for the last book. You see what I'm saying? So make sure to check it out, and thanks again to Children of Virtue and Vengeance by Tomi Adeyemi for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Scribner. Weird Black Girls by Elwyn Cotman is a collection of seven stories in which characters pursue their obsessions on paths to glory and destruction, while all around them their worlds twist and warp, oscillating between reality and impossibility. On display throughout is Cotman's ability to reveal truths about the human experience, about things like friendship, love, betrayal, bitterness, all through whimsy, horror, and fantasy. Elegiac in tone, imaginative, and humorous in their execution, the character-driven stories in Weird Black Girls challenge, incite, and entertain. The author's last book was named one of NPR's Best Books of the Year and was a finalist for the Philip K. Dick Award, with reviews appearing in the New York Times, Wired, BuzzFeed, and Locus, among other publications. Definitely make sure to check out Weird Black Girls by Elwyn Cotman. And thanks again to Scribner for sponsoring this episode.
Okay.
News.
Do you want to talk about a news story first?
Yeah. So first I want to do a follow-up on the last episode. We talked about how Wakanda Forever was going to be released on Disney Plus on February 1st. And one of our listeners, Megan, thank you, Megan, for writing in, pointed out that I had completely misunderstood the tweet because Disney did not use commas. And so the grammar was misleading. It is not one day only. You can watch it starting on February 1st. Only on Disney Plus, not only on February 1st on Disney Plus. So, Megan, thank you for clearing that up. You have more time than one day to watch Wakanda Forever, which is great news for all of us. I apologize for giving you wrong information.
I will take my frantic calendar note off of my Google.
I mean, honestly, I might leave it on there just because it's fun to have like a designated like movie date, as it were. So, but you know, if for some reason February 1st does not work for your schedule, you have more time than that. So that's good news. Also, good news. I want to talk about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur first, if that's cool with you.
That sounds great.
I don't know, Sharifa, how much you've been following this. I actually talked about a teaser when Erica was guesting on the show. Whatever that was, like a couple months ago, maybe. So here's the update. Gizmodo has the actual trailer reported on by Sabina Graves. We got a teaser that was like basically a music video, which was amazing. And now we have the actual full trailer, which is going to be also on Disney Plus starting in February. So February 1st is like a good day for Disney Plus content, as far as I'm concerned. This trailer is amazing. I have read some of the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur comics, so I was super excited to see this. Everything about it, I was frantically texting my brother so that he could show it to my niece. Like, aww. I'm just 100% in on this.
It sounds really cool. I just watched the trailer this morning, and I love the art style. Yes. I really like it when we get something different with animation art styles. And I've seen that. I think they compare it in this piece. They compared the art style to Into the Spider-Verse, which I loved. Like, that style was so cool. Yes. This one seems a little bit different to me.
Yeah.
But it is still, like, amazing. And I also love that she is on quad skates because, you know, I had my fling with quad skates. So I'm just like, I love everything about this. I agree. February is, you know, looking like a really great month for Disney Plus content. And I cannot wait to watch the first episode of this series.
Yeah. And just to like give it a quick summary, Moon Girl is the superhero name of Lunella, who is a young black girl who lives in New York City and is a tiny genius. She's a tiny genius. and she like accidentally imports a T-Rex into New York City like you do, who becomes her, you know, crime-fighting companion. And we get to see her with her friends, with her family in this trailer. It's just, like, super fun looking. I can't wait for it. So get excited.
Yeah. Super exciting. Super exciting. Well, I am going to talk about a quick one, actually. We just released on BookRiot.com our most anticipated. And it's yet another opportunity for all of us to add too many books to our TBR for the top of the year. and I took a look at some of the fantasy picks and the science fiction picks. And also, I do recommend when you click on this in the show notes, also going to fiction and horror, because there are some speculative works and some supernatural stuff in there as well. But one of the titles that I for some reason didn't see on my radar at all is A Work in Translation. And I am forever looking for more SFF works in translation. It's called Our Share of Night by Mariana Enriquez, and it's translated by Megan McDowell. And I think it just like hits the white hot center of like the zeitgeist of what everybody seems to be enjoying lately, which is gothic horror and also cult stories. So this is a combo of, it's a gothic horror story set in 20th century Argentina. And it's about a family who belong to a cult. And there's some supernatural stuff happening in this one. So the cult is channeling the darkness, capital D darkness, and the fate of his family is soon going to be passed down to the son in this family. And so there's a whole family and generational struggle that's happening here. It sounds really good, and I'm so glad I scrolled through the list to check out some of the titles and see if there was anything I was missing on my radar. But they also shout out Chain Gang All-Stars, which we talked about, and Grady Hendrix's new work, How to Sell a Haunted House, and a lot of new stuff from some very popular authors among rioters and among just readers in general, like T.J. Klune in The Lives of Puppets is here. Leigh Bardugo has a new one called Hellbent coming out. So lots of really cool titles in case we missed anything in talking about some of our upcoming anticipated reads. Check out this list. It has a lot of good stuff. Even if you want to read stuff beyond SFF, there's plenty to add to your TBR.
Yeah, that's also what I love about these lists, is that people find titles that I just would not have come across. And that's the beauty of the crowdsourced most anticipated list at the Riot.
Indeed, indeed. It's a good one.
All right. Well, we have some more D&D shenanigans news to talk about.
Meaty so one.
I'm going to do like my best summarizing, but I'm also going to point y'all to two good pieces. It's two parts of news. So the first piece that I list here is on TechCrunch, reported on by Amanda Silberling. And then the second piece is on the Mary Sue, reported on by Samantha Puck. And here's the thing to know about this. So D&D, Wizards of the Coast, which is the, you know, parent company of D&D, in like December, I want to say, released this update to their creator terms of service, more or less. They have had a very like open policy for a very long time, which is why things like, you know, Critical Role exist, for example, where people can make money off of playing D&D, creating their own add-ons for, you know, the role-playing game. You can sell your own versions and manuals for dungeons and things. Like, this has been allowed. You can kickstart these things. It's like been allowed for a long time. But they updated it and then leaked it. They sent it to some prominent creators for review, and it was theoretically not supposed to be publicly, you know, available for anybody else to see, but of course it got leaked. And there was a huge backlash because they were basically making the terms much more restrictive. Creators who were earning money off of doing things like Kickstarters and live streams and all of that stuff would then owe Wizards of the Coast money in a way that was like, you know, creators were like, I would have to shut all this down. Like, I would not be able to do this anymore. And, you know, the fan community for D&D got very, there was a petition, like a huge blowback. So then, of course, Wizards of the Coast were like, that was just a draft. Like, we thank you for the feedback. And they just recently, there's a brand new update on this as of yesterday at the time of this recording on January 19th. So they have now made it clear based on, I mean, I really think it's got to be based on the blowback that the new, they're calling it the OGL. This is the licensing agreement that creators will be subject to. They're actually putting it under Creative Commons, which is a big deal because you can't take that back.
Yeah.
Once you've done that, like, that's it. It's you've done it. Like, there's no take backs for Creative Commons, apparently, which I didn't know. And, you know, the other, like, there are other parts of this licensing agreement that do still have, you know, there are changes being updated to those. This is where I get a little confused, but I think the Mary Sue breaks it down pretty well. And they've got provisions for, like, dealing with hateful content, because as we have covered, you know, some people are really gross yeah. with this stuff and importing all kinds of, you know, racism and homophobia and transphobia into their gaming setups. But it's really interesting because, you know, as, like, somebody who's sort of on the outskirts of all of this, like, I pay attention, but I don't regularly play. I'm not involved in this in any real daily way. It makes sense, right, that Wizards of the Coast would want to make money off of related content. Mm-hmm. But it's even more interesting to see that they have now put it under Creative Commons. Like, that's a pretty big deal, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's a... I can see how this would be challenging. I was, when I first read about this before we got the update, I was definitely thinking about, you know, enterprises like Critical Role and
yeah.
how damaging that would be for the fan base. But also, like, as you read more and more, you do realize that it's a really complicated challenge that they're trying to deal with. I don't know how, like, I would have seen the fan backlash coming a mile away.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
like they were hoping to do something. They were obviously not seeing this as something that was going to be out in the open and, you know, get that backlash. But I just felt like I learned a lot about, because I also am not directly involved in a lot of Dungeons and Dragons creations, and, you know, I do not play at all and don't really touch the game. So I felt like I learned a lot about, like, you know, how they make the small margin of profit some of these creators yeah. make, even when they're you know, riffing off of D&D, and what it could mean to have, like, their gross revenue chewed mm-hmm. into. So this is just, I definitely also, I second recommending that everybody read these pieces, because it's really interesting. And there are so many pieces to the puzzle, but you did a great job of summarizing
it all. I tried. I probably got some stuff slightly wrong or really wrong, but that's my best understanding of it. And like you said, you know, people should go in and read if you're interested. And I do think it's actually really interesting from a fandom perspective, from a licensing perspective, from, you know, a gaming perspective. Like, it's really fascinating. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, for the last bit of news, there is an exciting adaptation in the works in the form of a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon series. This is reported on by Molly Templeton over at Tor.com. And I didn't realize that it's been 23 years since the release
okay.
of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I have so many big feelings about that because I saw it in the theater.
Oh, wow.
And to be told...
I know a lot of people who did.
To be told that that was 23 years ago is rude. Quite frankly, rude.
Yeah.
I'm old. It's fine. It's fine.
That is wild. It is wild. So it's been a minute, and I remember it, like, the release of this movie was so big on so many levels, because we hadn't really had a film like this. This is so Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was based on a book series, the Crane Iron Pentalogy, and the actual movie was based off of, I believe it says, the fourth book in the series.
Yeah.
So there's lots to work with. And I remember it being such like a cinematic feat to produce this film. And I kind of suspected even back then that more would come out of the movie than just the movie itself. So I am also kind of surprised. I think that in the back of my mind, I thought I must have just missed that something like this had already happened. So I was kind of taken by surprise that we hadn't already had this. But I am really excited because obviously we've come quite a way in 23 years in terms of, you know, the things we're able to do with film and cinematography and, you know, effects. And this series is perfect. Like the story and the style of film is so perfect for really harnessing a lot of the developments and advances we've made with film and effects. So I'm really excited about it. It's going to be executive produced, I believe it says, by Jason Ng. So Jason Ng is adapting the series for Sony Pictures Television. And so this is the first, it's described as the first in a suite of live action series being produced by Sony Pictures for MGM and Amazon Prime Video. So that's where we'll be able to watch it, I assume. And it doesn't, we don't get a lot. It's very early in the development of this series, so we don't get a lot of information about what we can expect from it. But I also didn't realize and learn from this piece that the series was published in the late 1930s and early 1940s. So this is like a classic.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see what happens with it, what they do with it, and how visually stunning it's going to be, because I expect it will be very visually stunning.
Yeah. No, I'm super excited about this. I was thinking back to seeing it in the theater, and I'm pretty sure that that was the first in translation, like, you know, subtitled movie that I ever saw in a theater. And that was like, it's not art house, like, right? It was like a blockbuster. It was a huge deal.
It was absolutely a blockbuster.
And and that was a pretty, like, that's a pretty awesome moment when I think back on it. I had, you know, grown up on Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee movies. But to, like, be in a theater with, like, you know, tons of other people, and it's huge on the screen, and it's subject, I mean, it was just, it was a really cool moment in my life. And I am gonna buy and read the series, because I did not know that these were I mean, of course they're based on books, like, obviously, but it didn't occur to me that that would be true. I know. So I'm excited to read the original, because I love Wuxia books as well. Once I discovered that was a thing, which took me way longer than it should have, but I have read some others and super excited to add these to my stacks. And then, yeah, really excited to see what they do with it in terms of a series that seems like, as you said, it's perfect. It's perfect. So,
yeah,
I'm jazzed about that.
I think it paved the way for a lot of subtitled films. And I am so grateful, because I've watched so many amazing subtitled films since then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we get into some stats, we're going to hear from another sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Mobius, part of Hachette Book Group. I have for you a swashbuckling fantasy that is full of demons, possible gods, ghosts, and an ornery mule. So, Essevar Boros is one of the legendary sword-fighting magistrates known as the Great Coats, and the king's personal investigator of the supernatural, and he is no stranger to tales of ghosts and demons. So when the fractious monks of the abbey, rumored to be the birthplace of the gods, begin warring over claims of a new pantheon arising, the frantic abbot summons him to settle the dispute. Armed only with his famed investigative talents, his faltering skill with a blade, and imperious, his ornery mule. In the words of Donkey from Shrek, though, he's a noble steed, okay? Armed with all those things, Estivar must root out the source of the madness lurking inside the once sacred walls of Isola Sombra before its chaos spread to the country he's sworn to protect. Pick up Crucible of Chaos by Sebastian D. Castile for all of the wonderful things I just described to you. I mean, it sounds like a good time. And thanks again to Mobius, part of Hachette Book Group, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by W.W. Norton & Company Incorporated. So, Negative Space by Gillian Linden follows a week in the life of an English teacher at a New York private school. At home, her children ask constant questions about mortality, and her husband offers occasional counsel between Zoom calls. At school, something happens. She accidentally witnesses an ambiguous, possibly inappropriate interaction between a teacher and a student, but how can she be sure of what she saw? Negative Space is a portrait of a woman caught between the pressures of what's normal and what isn't, and examines what we owe the people who depend on us in a fractured and indifferent world. It's a debut novel and a short novel. It's perfect if you want something quick and easy to carry around, but it's also thought-provoking. It takes place during the pandemic, but it's not pandemic-focused, and it really just looks at everyday anxieties in low-threat situations that have high consequences. So make sure to check out Negative Space by Gillian Linden. And thanks again to W.W. Norton & Company Incorporated for sponsoring this episode.
All right, we're back. And it's time to dig into some data. And I think that this one, I'm always curious. I never look. I kind of like that it comes as a surprise to me to see what our most recommended books were for the previous year. And I am, of course, like the one who is, I think the two titles at the top are yes. My fault.
Fault. That's an interesting word choice. Well, The Book Eaters is also you.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So How High We Go in the Dark by, I'm just going to read the most recommended books and then we can talk about it. So How High We Go in the Dark by Sequoia Nagamatsu, Lesser Known Monsters of the 21st Century by Kim Fu, Light from Uncommon Stars by Rakeoki, When We Were Birds by Ayana Lloyd Banwo, Siren Queen by Neve Vo, August Kitko and the Mechas from Space by Alex White, The Spear Cuts Through Water by Simon Jimenez, The Daughter of Dr. Moreau by Sylvia Moreno-Garcia, The Book Eaters by Sunny D, and Nona the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. So many great titles in there. And I think is there only one book, I think, that we both recommended?
It's an interesting question. It is not part of my notes to say who recommended it. I don't track that. I think I do know that we both, I'm pretty sure, Light from Uncommon Stars, I think, was both of us. Well, did you read Siren Queen? I can't remember.
I didn't, because I knew that you read it and had recommended it, so I put it off. So that, and August Kitko was, I only read that for the book club.
Right,
episode.
And that was me. That was all me driving that one. Yeah, a lot of these are me, it turns out. I don't feel bad about that.
You love what you love.
I do love what I love. It's true. Well, I will say the thing that I'm super proud of for this is that we actually, these are the titles that got more than one recommendation, but I think the highest was like three mentions and most of them were two. So we actually don't double up that often.
Okay.
Like we do a really good job. I think we do a really good job of, trying to make sure we talk about different stuff as often as possible. But as you said, we love what we love. So, there's bound to be some repeats, and some of these were repeats because, they were on our most anticipated. Mm-hmm. And then when we actually read them, they were on our, quarterly favorites or whatever. So that's where most of the overlap comes from, honestly, is that we had been anticipating them and then we read them and loved them. So it works out nicely. I know. So but it's I think it's I really love this list, actually. And it does make me want to get to the ones I haven't read. You sent me The Book Eaters, so I have that now in my possession. And I also discovered when I was cleaning out my books, I have a galley of lesser known monsters of the 21st century. So that's getting bumped up on my list. I still don't know if I'm ready emotionally for How High We Go in the Dark. Fair. But I, you know, it's on my radar.
That's a tough one to read. It really gets you. But I think lesser known monsters of the 21st century, like there are some lighthearted stories in there. I think in general, it's just like not as dark and challenging, especially because it's not related to any pandemic stuff, which, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel the same way. I think I finally have to get to Siren Queen.
Yes.
Like, I cannot seem to escape that book, and I just love everything Nevo does.
Yes.
And I really wanted to read it, but, you know, there's always the balancing act. I know we've talked about it before of like, well, I only have so much time to read, and I want to make sure that I'm recommending something different. And I 100% stress out about over-recommending the same titles more than I think is necessary or fair to myself.
Yeah.
But I do like to go back and read those books because I know that eventually I will be able to recommend them for the backlist episodes as well.
That's what I tell myself too. I was like, eventually this will be a backlist and then I can use it again. Oh, it's so funny
just waiting to be able to use it.
It's a balancing act podcast recommending. It really is. There's a lot of, you know, shenanigans that go into it on the back end that I don't think people realize. So,
yeah.
Okay, one last question.
Yes.
Have you read Nona the Ninth yet? Because I know that was high on your list.
I haven't. Oh. I see it. It's literally next to my bed on my bookshelf over there. And I look at it all the time. And I'm currently working through two different books that were on my TBR before that.
Well, that's
fair. Also, there's a part of me that wants to read, you know, do your whole reading list thing.
Yeah.
And I just know that's going to take a while, knowing myself.
Yeah.
But I just need to bite the bullet and
it's there for you when you're ready. It's there whenever you get to it. You'll know when it's time, I believe.
Yes.
It'll be fun.
I need to be ready.
That's right.
I need to be ready.
Truly. Well, I filtered my tracker by first by titles, which, you know, is what we just talked about. And then I was like, ooh, what authors did we recommend multiple times in that we recommended different books by them? So not just that, like, we recommended the same book twice, but what authors did we recommend multiple titles by? So that's how this next section of most recommended authors came to be. And number one, surprising no one, is Nevo. Like, I just can't. I think both of us just can't stop recommending those works. Like, there's such range. There are so many different series now and titles. Like, there's the Gatsby one that you've read that I haven't, and then there's Siren Queen that I've read that you haven't.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like there's so much there. So
yeah, and the novellas, The Empress of Salt and Fortune.
Exactly. Like, my obsession.
Yeah, that series is so good. And I am absolutely not surprised by that one. I was surprised by T. Kingfisher, even though I know that's me.
Well, I think I finally read a T. Kingfisher this year, I think is what happened. So it was both of us.
Okay,
I think is what happened. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, I don't remember. But I can see, because I know I have recommended The Twisted Ones a few times. And then there was that other baking. I cannot remember the name of the book off the
top
of my
head. Now I'm like, oh yeah, which book was it though that I read? And of course I can't remember and I didn't look it up. Let's see if I can quickly come up with it here. But I think that's what happened because, you know, T. Kingfisher was tricky for me because a lot of those books are horror. And, you know, obviously I steer a little clear. But I think I did read, well, and now of course there's like a billion titles, so I'm not going to be able to, I'll find it after the show and I'll update it. It's in the spreadsheet.
Yeah, and I know there was a new release.
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe it was that.
Yeah, so I think that's where it happened. And then again, an author who is one of our go-tos, Silvia Moreno Garcia, also on the list. No surprises there. I got really obsessed with Daughter of Dr. Moreau, which was on definitely most anticipated and one of my quarterly favorites, I want to say.
Oh, yeah.
And but also we talk about, you know, she's got so many books to recommend.
Yeah, I know I read, you know, of course, I can't remember if you read it, Mexican Gothic. I know that
one is one that everybody else read. Yeah, so I didn't read that one.
Okay, yeah.
I was balancing.
Yeah, and I think Sylvia Moderno, I'm not good at, I'm not the type of reader that follows an author through a bunch of works. I guess recently I've become more of that person, but Sylvia Moreno Garcia is one author whose works I just immediately pick up now. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm not much of a catalog reader, but if there is a catalog I've read a lot of, it's probably Sylvia Moreno Garcia and Nevo at this point. Those two are just like, I will read anything they publish at this point.
Yep. And then also surprising no one, the fourth author that we recommended more than one title by this year was N.K. Jemisin. I mean, of course, like inevitably.
Of course.
Of course. Icon. I mean, come on. Come on. I would have been like shocked if was not on this list. I would be like, I tracked this wrong. Clearly I tracked this wrong.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, I don't know if any... I can't remember if I've heard of anything new coming out from Jemisin this year, it'll be interesting to see if we keep... I know that I'm going to try to stop talking about The Broken Earth.
Why would you do that, though?
It's going to be like that type of... Who was it? Somebody was like... I can't believe how much y'all are recommending these Becky Chamber books. And then they finally read it and they were like, okay, I'm not annoyed at you for over-recommending that anymore. Maybe that'll be Jemisin too.
I forgot about that. That was hilarious. A really funny series of emails.
I think that was that was a shining moment, in my opinion, for our podcast. Just we over-recommended a thing and it actually was helpful.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I always remind myself is that, like, you know, there's like data that I know about because of going on sales meetings with our sales director that people have to hear about a thing like, I think it's like 7 to 12 times sometimes before they like pick it up or click on the link or whatever. Like, it's actually higher than you would think necessarily on average. Obviously, there's exceptions to this rule and there's some things you hear about and you never pick up, right? Like, that's fine. But this is a principle of advertising, is that people need to see something or hear about it multiple times before they go looking at it, in general, on average. And I always remind myself, like, yeah, there are authors I've heard about a billion times, but then one of the times I hear about it is going to be the time where I'm like, oh, yeah, I should pick that up. Like, that's, and obviously we don't want to do that with everything, but, you know, an occasional lean-in is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, we're so overwhelmed by information all the time. I guess I'm not surprised then.
Yeah.
And we do our best. Well, now we can talk about some of the episodes that you all loved. It's our top five most popular episodes. Always fascinating to see this list. So at the top of the list is More Favorites. So this one got the most More Favorites from early 2022, which is so funny because it's like I kind of would have expected. The second one is early 2022. So it's a part one of that couple of episodes. So that came in second.
Yeah.
So everybody was more interested in the addendum to our... We are overflow of lists, which is so hilarious to me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, I always wonder if there's like what week was it? What else was going on in the world? Like, there's sometimes reasons that have nothing to do with topic why a certain podcast episode performs better than another one. But that did, I noticed that too, and it cracked me up. It's like, well, who knows? Like, it's fine. I feel okay about that.
But that's good news. Anytime we have too many titles to talk about, we can pretty confidently decide to have an overflow yes. episode.
Yes.
That's what I'm taking.
That's right, exactly.
And then this one I think is a backlist. Mm-hmm. Comfort Reads in SFF. I think this was mine.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I felt like there are so many ways in which we talk about cozy reads. And I remember that when we published a couple of lists, as this was in like the height of the pandemic, we published a few lists that were like comfort reads, cozy SFF reads. And I remember they got so many views.
Yeah.
And I think it's because people are still just like, I just want to be comforted at this time, in this timeline right now. And I felt the exact same way. And so I always feel like I will enjoy talking about books that make me feel good. And I always want to pass those books on. And I did cheat in this backlist episode because I recommended a newer book. But that happens. And
yeah.
That's fine.
I'm remembering now, I think you were out. And so somebody came on, was it Alice or Kim, who came on to the show with me and we talked about some, like, you know, chicken soup comfort-y read
guest episodes.
We've done, basically what I'm saying is we did more than one comfort read episode in 2022, which clearly was not a problem.
So yeah.
Probably we will continue to have those. We'll continue to update you on the comfort reads in sci-fi and fantasy. Because clearly, as you said, everybody's like, I'm looking for it. You're looking for it. We're all looking for it.
We need it in our lives all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. And this one was SFF Mystery, that episode, I believe, was a guest.
Yeah, episode. I think that's right. We should have, I just like dumped these in here and then didn't dump it in.
I did a quick glance.
Jen failed.
That's totally fine. I prepared myself a little bit by doing a quick glance. And hopefully I got it right because, you know, we have a giant show notes doc that I can do control F on.
Right.
But, you know, I might be mistaken once in a while and we've done some repeats, but I believe this one was with Erica, who is an editor at Book Riot. And I realized doing this episode that I have not read a lot of SFF Mystery. So I was actually thinking about that with the most anticipated when we were talking about that and really being really excited about the Gas Lamp Mystery by Malka Older that's coming out because I was like, well, this is obviously one area where I could stand to read more books in. And obviously it's a big hit with our listeners. So.
Yeah, I think those genre blendy books are very appealing to lots of folks, including us. And I was just realizing, I think I've read more sci-fi mystery than I've read fantasy mystery. Like, I've read a lot of murder in space books, is how I'm going to phrase that. Like, you know, like, okay, it's a locked spaceship, like, who's killing everyone situation. Which I love. I love that. But I don't think I've read as much fantasy mystery. So that's an interesting thing for me to think about for future reading. And Yeah, it's interesting.
I feel there has to be a lot of it out there, but I can only bring to mind science fiction mystery also. So weird.
Right?
Okay, well, that'll probably reappear on our episodes list.
Totally.
And then the final one is one I find very gratifying. Mm-hmm. It's award-winning short fiction. I find it gratifying because I'm always happy to read short fiction in my very busy, busy life.
It makes me happy too because I really do feel like short fiction has gotten more awareness and play. Like novellas get talked about, I think, just tons more, at least by me than I used to. And I think by a lot of other people, because especially in speculative fiction, you know, people like Tor.com are out here publishing the bejesus out of them and making them more available. But, you know, shorter fiction, because this is not novellas, this is like short stories, novelettes, and, you know, that kind of thing, flash fiction, which we've spent episodes talking about. Super fun to prep for. And B, it makes me happy that people are interested in it because it has not had a lot of public awareness, I don't think, in the past. And so I'm excited to see that, hopefully that trend continue.
Yeah, I love a novella. And it's obvious that lots of other people do. And I feel like this could easily become like an annual thing.
Yes.
We talk about,
yes,
like the award-winning short fiction of the year. I am so thrilled in advance to be able to read some of those books.
I love that idea.
Novellas and short stories.
Love it. Let's do it.
Let us do it. Okay. Well, do you want to kick us off by talking about your personal favorite episodes to record?
Yeah. I was looking, you know, it's so funny to run the numbers on our most popular because, you know, it's good data. It is very gratifying in a lot of cases to see that people responded to, you know, some of our themes or our whimsies. But I will confess that I picked not specific episodes, but specific type of episodes. I love doing the book club episodes and I love doing the page versus screen episodes. There's something so fun and satisfying about diving into one thing. And whether we're like comparing, you know, like I see you have Willow on here too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, whether we're comparing, you know, that or like thinking about like an adaptation very specifically, or we're digging into one title that we've both read and sharing our feelings about it. I know they're not as popular, so like, you know, we take that into account when we build our schedule of themes, but I really love doing them, so we're never not going to do them as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because they're just fun to, they're just so much fun to do. I think it's maybe because I used to run a lot of book clubs as a bookseller.
Mm.
And that was always really fun and interesting. And then I'm not in any book clubs right now for the first time in like a long time. And maybe I miss it. Maybe,
yeah,
I just miss that in-depth discussion. And so I'm taking it out on y'all.
Well, I enjoy those too. Like, I feel like I always get an opportunity to read something I probably would have pushed off or just not gotten around to. And to be able to talk about it with somebody else is also something I don't get to do a lot of. I have not historically been involved in a lot of book clubs, except for the Read Harder book clubs we used to have way back when, those I led.
Yes, shout out.
But yeah. I know, old. That's some history. That's some history from back when I was like just a contributor.
Oh, yeah.
But it's always fun to be able to chat about it. And I think the Station 11, if you hadn't said page versus screen, the Station 11 episode was one of my favorite to talk about. Like, that, I just had such a good time. And I just loved both the book and the adaptation,
yes,
so much that it was just like, oh, I just can't wait to talk excessively about both of these works. They're so good.
Mm.
So I'm glad you chose those two. They're very strong picks.
Mm.
And yeah, mine was the Willow reboot for the same. You know, for me, I like to sometimes have a break. I think it comes as no surprise to anybody probably that sometimes it's nice to have a break from reading, and to just sit and watch something that's fun. And, you know, I love film and television, you know, almost as much as I love books. I love the arts in general, and it's nice to be able to spread your wings a little, even though we're still in the world of SFF, like to be able to watch something like Willow and to get a bit of nostalgia and to just enjoy ourselves and talk about a thing we watched. I obviously love that. Between Station 11 and Willow and all of the other adaptations and just plain TV shows and movies we've discussed.
Remember when we did Blade?
I was literally just thinking about Blade. I was going back in my mind to the ones we had, to the shows and the movies we'd watched about. I loved doing that as well. I know some of those were like kind of trash.
It's good times though.
But I still loved it. I still loved it. And then my other one is just like me being totally predictable. The Creepy Reads episode, even though I felt a little bad because I knew that meant you would probably have to read some horror reads. But you actually, you know, you did, as you mentioned on that episode, we both have our different versions yes. of like what a horror read is to us, or, you know, what types of horror books we will read. And there are so many out there that it was, I think, an easy one for both of
yeah.
us. But I will forever love talking about horror. And that's just me.
And we love you for it.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope nobody's annoyed by all the horror picks, because I can tell you there's more to come. Yeah, so that's... Those are the stats. Them's the stats. That's the data. And it makes me so excited to try and incorporate more of this stuff into our list of episodes every year. And I'm always curious about what our listeners are into and, you know, being able to reflect on what we were into in mm-hmm. the previous year. This always feels very cathartic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it. That's it for the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. SFF Yeah is sound edited by Caitlin Brame. Again, many thanks to her for making us sound great each and every episode, especially when we are sick and trying our best. For more recommendations, you can check out bookriot.com, and you can find our other podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. Thank you so much for listening. You can email us at sffyeah@bookriot.com. Let us know if you have any favorite episodes or if you have any recommendations for things you're interested in hearing us talk about. If you have a moment, please do review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It does help people find us, and we really appreciate it when you go out of your way. And you can find us online. Where can they find you, Jen?
I am still only on Tumblr these days, so Jen IRL, JennIRL.
And I am on Instagram at SZainabWilliams, that's SCAINAB Williams. And we'll catch y'all next time.